This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. After a long, busy political convention week, it's time for our Week in Review.
Friends, delegates, and fellow Americans, I humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States.
That's Donald Trump last night formally accepting the Republican nomination, capping off the GOP convention in Cleveland. And in his speech, which was more than an hour long, Trump laid out his vision for America.
My plan will begin with safety at home, which means safe neighborhoods, secure borders, and protection from terrorism. There can be no prosperity without law and order.
Law and order. That was just one of the themes of this week's sometimes contentious Republican convention. So let's turn to our panel to dig into some of those themes. With us in studio, fresh back from Cleveland, is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Hi there, Anthony.
Hey, Deb. Nice to see you.
Also with us, Arlene Isaacson, political consultant and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Hello.
Hi.
And Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts State Senate. Hello.
Happy to be here.
So, Anthony, fresh from Cleveland, fresh off the plane, initial thoughts on this convention?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. It was a really, really interesting week. I mean, I've covered a few of these conventions, several election cycles. And one of the things in sort of the modern sort of political world is these things, these events are so choreographed, they're so structured, they're so scripted, that sometimes it can be frustrating to cover them as a journalist. That was not the case this week in Cleveland. And it was fascinating. I mean, every day there was some new kind of eruption, some controversy. You had the floor fight on Monday. You had the controversy over allegations of plagiarism by Melania Trump. And then, of course, the whole Ted Cruz thing on Wednesday. Trump kept sort of appearing at odd moments throughout. We could never get enough of Donald Trump. And then, of course, the big speech last night brought it all home. So really, really interesting week.
And Arlene, you've been sort of watching things from here. What are your thoughts overall, and especially, reaction to the speech last night?
It has been fascinating. I usually have to force myself to watch conventions day after day, and this one's been a lot easier in some ways because it was more entertaining and more unexpected in so many ways. The speech from Trump last night was, he really had a bunker mentality, a sort of darker vision, if you will, of what the country, where we are and what we need. It was sort of more, I've heard it described as more the paranoid Richard Nixon than the uplifting Ronald Reagan version of it. But the thing that struck me the most about it was how, I hate to say it, but he sounded a little bit like a snake oil salesman selling an elixir, where he would list the fears, all the illnesses and the ailments and the problems, and the only solution he offered was the elixir of himself. It was very egomaniacal. The magic potion was me, Donald Trump. I alone can fix it, he would say. Who thinks that way? Far less even speaks that way.
Richard Tessay.
Well, I think this was obviously an unconventional convention.
Right.
And as a viewer, I was tuning in every night not knowing what the heck was going to happen next. And I think the speech, obviously everything accumulated last night, and I think that the speech was pretty interesting. I think the way the delivery, I think, was a little unnatural for him. He's usually much more bombastic if you've watched any of his rallies. But I would disagree. We're all analysts, and I think every analyst who has been watching this campaign from the very beginning has got it wrong. And he seems to have, would watch him and maybe think that, he's bombing or he's way off the, going right over the edge, and people respond to him. So I'm interested to see. I was watching it with somebody very non-political last night, and they thought he was great.
So do we have it wrong because people are responding in a way that we don't expect, or what do we have it wrong?
I think that there are a lot of people who really don't want to watch a convention where everything's sugar-coated, and I think if you think the country is going in a good direction, yeah, and I have one opinion. But if you do think America's in trouble, you're worried about terrorism, you're worried about the $19 trillion debt, you're worried about the economy, about whether your kids are going to have the same type of life you have, and you feel as though this election is the Armageddon, you know.
But Richard,
he was
I think you're speaking directly to him. Yeah, I think you're really on to something here in that I think what happens that what we do as analysts sometimes is a completely different language than the folks on the convention floor or Trump supporters are thinking. I mean, I asked a question yesterday because I did a piece this morning about what some people said was a lack of serious policy discussion in the convention. And I spoke to a Massachusetts delegate, and he said, "We're not interested in policy discussions right now. We're interested in emotion. We're interested in a feeling. We're interested in when Donald Trump says we're going to make America safer, greater, and more secure again, that speaks to us. Don't talk to it." And I encountered this again and again and again and again on the campaign trail. I would talk to people, but what about his tax plan? But do you really think he has the experience? But what about, you know, I'd ask those kinds of questions, and people would just look at me, and it's almost like, no, that you don't get it. That's not what we're focused on.
But is that shallow?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's a profound feeling of dislocation, of losing control, of losing representation in this world. And there are a lot of people that Trump is speaking to.
You know, I think you're both right. I think that he actually is successful in speaking at that level. I just thought he'd offer something more than the solution is me.
No,
I
agree with you. That's, I'm sort of in the middle about his speech, by the way. I thought he kind of brought it home in the sense was we finally had a night that stayed on script, right? And that was a good thing for the campaign. And he brought all those themes that he's been talking about for the last year together in a cohesive way. What I don't think he did was appeal to people beyond core Trump supporters. So in that sense, it might have been a missed opportunity.
One thing I want to do is just play a clip from his speech. Here's what he said about police and the strained relationship between police and the community, because I think this cut from his speech sort of touches on what we're talking about here. Let's listen.
I have a message to every last person threatening the peace on our streets and the safety of our police. When I take the oath of office next year, I will restore law and order to our country.
How?
Exactly.
How?
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
This is
how,
the,
Anthony.
This is the question. I mean, here's the thing, and this is where I think the Trump people are sort of missing the boat on this one thing. Bill Clinton talked when he ran for president about restoring law and order. It wasn't his main theme, but he came up with an idea, and he said, we're going to allocate money, and we're going to put 500,000 cops on the streets of America. So it was a program, and he did it. And, you know, there's, you can debate whether or not it worked, but there were more cops on the street. I don't know what he means when he says, when I take office, I will restore law and order. How does a president do that?
You know, I think it's the CEO mentality that he has enjoyed for much of his life, where he can just say, you're fired, or he can just say, you're hired. But the reality is, when you work in government, it just doesn't work
but
that
the,
way.
On the
but
other,
Richard, you say this is what people want.
But on the other hand, you know, we elected Barack Obama, and everybody elected him thinking this is great for the country. It's going to end the racial divide, bring everybody together. And here we are, almost 8 years later, and race relations in this country have never been so bad. And the president can do a lot, I think, with race relations, but also with public safety, by just having a president who, you know, says, you know, yeah, everybody's civil rights are important, but number one, we got to respect the police. And I think there are a lot of people in this country who feel as though we don't have a leader right now who's not, you know, we don't have a leader who's really saying, hey, you know, the police is our first line of defense. We need to stand behind them.
Yeah, but, you know, no one can bring the country together if the only thing they can say is, you got to respect the police. I mean, I take that as a given. They're there to protect us. We have to respect them. But that doesn't solve the racial divide problem.
And you take that as a given, and I take it as a given. But, you know, when you're an average American watching TV, watching police officers being mowed down, whether it's in Baton Rouge or in Dallas, the country is in a state right now where people...
I still want to know what he's... When he says, when I take office, I will restore law and order, is he talking about, for example, taking more guns off the street? I don't think so. Is he talking about arresting more people and making, you know, the largest incarcerated population in the world even bigger? I don't know. He doesn't say. Is he talking about raising money to put more cops on the street? I don't know.
But then again, what are we doing right now? And I think there's a void of leadership in the country, and he's stepping forward. We'll see how Hillary handles it.
I have to say, I don't think that at all. I think there is no void of leadership. That the problems we face, the racial divides now, are not a function of a lack of a president who's not trying to lead on it. In fact, I think we have one who's trying to bring people together, but it ain't easy.
Okay, let's shift focus just a little bit here. Let's talk about LGBTQ rights, because this came up several times during the convention, last night as well, which, you know, in some ways is surprising, given the GOP's official party platform that was approved at the convention this week. That platform supports traditional marriage, puts limits on transgender restroom laws, and yet in his speech last night, this is what Donald Trump said. Let's listen.
As your president, I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens from the violence and oppression of a hateful foreign ideology. Believe me.
Did you hear what he said? You know, at first, some of my friends said, wasn't it great he mentioned LGBT, although he seemed to have trouble saying the letters, but at least he said it, and that was a good thing. But he didn't say he was going to protect us. He said he was going to protect us from foreigners. For goodness sakes, except for Orlando, the vast majority of LGBTs in America are not threatened by foreigners. The thing that threatens us are homegrown Americans who hate us because they're members of a religious right ideology. And that's what he studiously avoided.
Richard, say, what do you say about that?
I disagree with that. I think it is important to point out that as a gay man, you know, if I was living in a lot of the Muslim countries around the world, I would be being thrown off the top of a building, and that would be considered par for the course. And, you know, and to wake people up to understand that we are living in a really difficult world, and a dangerous world, is important. But I got to say, you know, Donald Trump is probably the most pro-gay candidate that we're going to probably see nominated by the Republican Party in our lifetime. And the fact that two speakers before him was Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal and the original investor for Facebook, who stood up, very, you know, incredible entrepreneur, stood up and said, hey, I'm gay and American, I'm proud of it, and was well received. And there was another clip you probably have of Donald Trump saying, you know, I'm so glad and proud of the way he was treated. And it's just,
okay,
you know,
took
it's
my
not,
clips, Richard.
Okay, not, it's not perfect, but it's getting, you know, with Donald, I'd rather have Donald Trump than Ted Cruz as the nominee any day of the week.
And I have to agree. I mean, he is probably better than any other Republican nominee before him on this, but that he skirted around the very fact that the platform contained so many anti-LGBT provisions, and he didn't go near that. He spoke about foreigners.
Yeah, I mean, I think
what
that's...
what do you make of that? Yeah, I just want to make sure,
yeah, sure.
Richard, what do you make of that?
That's sort of
the vision.
Yeah, Donald Trump is going to take the platform like everybody else does, like Hillary is going to do, and throw it in the trash barrel and govern, you know, put together their administration and govern as they see fit. Just like Charlie Baker did when I didn't go to the convention here, but there was an anti-gay section put in the platform. Charlie's been terrific on gay rights here in Massachusetts. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I just wanted to sort of to follow up on what Arlene was saying. I mean, what I found interesting about that comment about LGBTQ rights is it was just another example of this sort of gulf that separates Donald Trump from the sort of far right wing of this Republican Party. And it was just emblematic of the divisions that we saw in the whole Ted Cruz event Wednesday night. On the other hand, Richard, I completely agree with you. You know, there's a lot of sort of excitement and debate and talk about this new party platform. And then it doesn't mean anything. It's sort of, as you said, it gets dropped in the round file, and the Republican Party gets expressed by the person in the White House, not the platform.
It does mean something, though, in terms of his vice presidential pick. You know, Pence did a really wonderfully funny, self-deprecating introductory remarks about himself in which he described himself as somebody that nobody knows.
Right.
The truth of the matter is the LGBT community does know him. We know him very well because he has a terrible record on LGBT issues as governor and as congressman. And it ranges from saying that he wanted to take away money for people with AIDS and send it to conversion therapy so they can un-gay and de-gay people, or saying that he's against having equal rights, or saying he's against anti-discrimination legislation, or more recently and more famously, that his disastrous Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the one that says businesses can discriminate against us in Indiana. So It is threaded through not just the platform, but his choice for second in command.
And you know what was interesting about that is none of these debates came up. I mean, Richard, I don't know what you think about this, but when you think historically about some of these conventions, I mean, think about the way Vietnam was debated in 68, for example. I mean, there were these big issues. I mean, go back to 2008, the Iraq War was debated among the Democrats at the Democratic National Convention. And Arlene, what you're talking about sort of would have raised the possibility for, well, Pence says this, but Donald Trump says that, so how are we going to sort this out? And there was no sort of opportunity to air those differences, which I thought was a sort of represented a sort of paucity of public policy debate at this convention.
And I think it speaks to the fact that the Republican Party is a party right now that's in transition.
Interesting.
And in the sense that it's become much more populist. There are, you know, issues that Bernie Sanders cares about, like trade. You know, he's simpatico with Donald Trump right now. So it's interesting. Who knows, you know, if Trump wins, obviously he's going to leave an indelible mark and the party's going to basically be where it's heading right now. If he doesn't win 4 years from now, I think you're going to see a lot of those fights play out.
I want to talk about some of the other things that happened during this convention. One of them we made brief reference to, and that's the plagiarism scandal involving Melania Trump and whether or not her what happened with her speech and the similarities to Michelle Obama's 2008 convention speech. I'm wondering, do you think this story will continue to be a factor at all, or was it just a 36-hour news cycle story? Anthony?
I have a thought about that. So I think in that sense, Ted Cruz did a huge favor for the Trump campaign, because as soon as Ted Cruz declined to endorse him, the whole Melania Trump, did she crib from Michelle Obama or not, which seems pretty clear that she did, that whole story was no longer being talked about. So I still get the sense that this is something that is going to pass, even though it clearly wasn't a good moment for the campaign.
You know, I actually have a slightly different take on it than most of the commentary I've heard recently. I actually feel badly for her. I feel like, she's not a professional. In a way, it really wasn't her fault. In her way, the campaign really screwed it up. Now, how they screwed it up is that they should have admitted immediately that it was a mistake, because people can forgive a mistake, instead of trying to blame the Clinton folks. You know, had they just said, you know, she likes Michelle and she likes what she said, people would have said, oh, well, that's kind of nice and kind of open-minded.
Well, could you really
say
that and get away with it?
The thing, though, that keeps it going, I think, is that on the internet, there are so many memes that have been done about it that are quite frankly very funny. And I'm not talking about the mean ones. I mean, just genuinely funny ones. You know, they'd have a picture of her pretending to answer the plagiarism accusation, and they'd have her saying, these accusations against my plagiarism in my speech hurt not only me, but they hurt my children, Sasha and Malia. <You
know>? I want to also talk about Charlie Baker. Skip the convention, right? Our Governor Charlie Baker, as did John Kasich, Governor of Ohio. So let's talk about that in terms of political fallout. Richard, what do you think of that?
I think Charlie probably did the right thing. You know, he's never, from the beginning, when he was first elected, he said, you know what, especially having had Mitt Romney as a predecessor before him, he was very clear that he wasn't going to get involved in national politics. And, you know, he came, and I think he was smart at the very beginning to come out and said, I'm not voting for Trump, because every day he would have been asked about to comment on whatever Trump said, and his whole administration would have been engulfed in that. So I think he was smart, and people like him here because they do view him as, you know, a sort of nonpartisan governor, which I think is fine. Kasich, on the other hand, though, I think is a disgrace, and I want to just say a very small person, because all he had to do is at the very beginning of the convention show up and say, welcome to Cleveland. I hope you all have a good time during the week. I'm very busy for the rest of the week. I won't be here, but welcome.
Welcome and vote your conscience.
Vote your conscience.
Right. I mean, really.
And for him not even to pop in. And, you know, he held an event at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame down the street for the mm-hmm. He couldn't just come in as the sitting governor of that state, regardless of who was being nominated, just to welcome. And I think he looks smart. small, probably smaller, as small or smaller than Cruz.
I got to say, talking to a lot of the delegates on the floor, I heard, Richard, that view expressed a lot, that it wouldn't have been very difficult for Governor Kasich to just come in and say, welcome to Cleveland. On the Charlie Baker thing, the other thing that I heard was from a couple of delegates in the Massachusetts delegation was basically, Charlie Baker should have come. And he should have come because this is an opportunity for him to sort of speak up. And this is a great forum to sort of say the Republican Party is also Charlie Baker. And I'm here and I'm going to say this. And if it had happened early, maybe not in prime time, it's not like that convention would have been sort of demanding that he vote for Trump. Vote, I mean, maybe he would have gotten booed. Who knows? But I think in the long run, I see the point that these delegates are making, that maybe in terms of the idea of the big tent that the Republican Party often talks about wanting to be, this was an opportunity missed.
All right. Well, we have just enough time now for hubbubs. Those are the brief stories that maybe weren't at the top of the news, not the headlines this week, but they may have caught our attention. Arlene, what's your hubbub for the week?
I found a piece in this week's Beacon Hill Times that spoke about the sale of the John Jeffries House, which is a beautiful historic building, a B&B, at the steps away from Mass General Hospital. I think it's owned by Mass Eye and Ear. The primary focus for the past several generations of this building has been to house patients who needed to stay near the hospital for long stays or their families who needed to be able to visit them easily in an affordable place. So I don't know what its future will be, but there are a lot of people in the neighborhood who are going to mourn the loss of its historic and very real-world importance.
Richard Tessay, your hubbub for the week.
Okay, I don't know what people are doing this weekend, but I have a great suggestion. If you're looking for something to do, I strongly recommend the Stopping by the Revere Sand Sculpting Festival, which kicks off tonight, and it's going to run right through Sunday. It's in its 10th year right now, and it's grown into one of the biggest festivals in the entire country right now. The people who come come from all over the world. I think 20 different countries are represented. Each artist is given 10 tons of sand, an 18 by 18 foot area to work in, and they can't use anything but sand and water.
And you've been before.
I have been there. They have 24 hours to do to create something. There are going to be fireworks. There are bands. There's a huge amount of people, and it's a really good take. So.
And you can take the tea.
You can take the tea right
to there. The beach. All right.
Yes.
Okay, Anthony.
Okay, so my hubbub's about some of the interesting things that happen that we might not know about at the many institutions of higher learning in this city. So MIT's Media Lab yesterday had a one-day conference on what it called forbidden research. Now, what that means is revealed by one of its key speakers. It included former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden, who's still in exile living in Russia. They beamed him in on a line. But speaking of Snowden, the most interesting thing about this is that the meeting announced, the conference announced this idea of a disobedience prize. It comes from the co-founder of LinkedIn, Reid Hoffman. And the disobedience prize is described this way. We'll go to a person or group engaged in what we believe is excellent disobedience for the benefit of society. So that's my hubbub. I just like this idea of excellent disobedience for the benefit of society, all the ways that could be defined.
I like it, too.
Well, I have one, and it's sort of sticking to convention-related news here. This is a study from the University of Pennsylvania which found that people who have read Harry Potter books are more likely to have a negative opinion of Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. So this study said that the more Harry Potter books that a respondent read, the more the decline in that person's rating of Trump, who maybe they call he who must not be named. All right, so there we go. WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks, thanks. Safe travels to Philadelphia for
back
next
to
week's
Philadelphia.
Convention.
That's right. Thank you.
Also, Arlene Isaacson, political consultant and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus.
Thank you.
To you as well. And Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts Senate. Thanks for being with us. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.